Han turned toward the black female and shooed her back toward the corridor.
I'm hurt.
Saniki froze halfway into the salon and looked to Imala for instruction.
Time is money,
Imala said, waving Saniki forward.
You understand?
Not really, Leia said. She held her hand out to Saniki, presumably Imala's daughter, and used the force to hold her back, drawing a gasp of surprise from the young squib. But I'm beginning to think we really should talk about your employees. You could take a lesson from them in politeness. The three squibs sighed and looked at each other. Then Imala shook her head and said,
You know how valuable our time is, and our schedule is very tight today. You'll just have to buy another...
Maybe we can make it worth your while, Leia interrupted.
I doubt that,
Sly said.
If you'll just leave.
We're not leaving,
Han growled. He turned back to Leia.
You were saying, Cyrul?
Leia smiled and propped her hand on her hip. Well, I'm sure the colony wouldn't want our mag cannon to end up in the hands of the Chiss or the Galactic Alliance. Lysol clacked its mandibles in a very definite no. Then maybe we should sell it to our old friends, Leia said. I'm sure they could find a safe buyer for it, and that way we would be free to run a load of cargo to Tanupe.
Tanupe is in a war zone,
Sly said.
The colony only allows insect crews to run supplies into war zones.
So talk to them for us,
Han said.
It looks like you've got plenty of pull around here.
Lythal wants to know why you're so interested in Tanupe.
Imala translated.
We're not,
Han answered.
It's the stealth X's we want to see.
The squibs, who had almost certainly figured out that Han and Leia wanted to see Jaina and Zek, rolled their eyes. But Lysel asked, We have a client who could benefit from the technology, Leia answered. She smiled conspiratorially. And I'm sure it would only help the colony's war effort if the Galactic Alliance suddenly had to divert even more resources to chasing pirates and stealth ships. Lysel's antennae tipped forward in interest. Then the insect turned to Grease. Grease sighed, then said,
Sure, we'll vouch for him.
His sagging red eyes glared blaster bolts at Leia.
And if they disappoint you, we'll make sure they take their secrets to the grave with them.
The private hangar, hidden deep under several metallic asteroids on the rear side of the nest, appeared much more orderly than Lysel's main hangar. 2 dozen slain and corporal transports hung on the walls in neat rows, taking on everything from blaster rifles to concussion missiles to artillery pieces. There was no transacting. Nothing was being removed from the vessels, and there was not a Membrosia ball in sight. Han swung the Swift into an open berth near the exit membrane, using the attitude thrusters to stick the landing pads to the wax-lined floor extra firmly. The hangar was crawling with big bugs, Killick and otherwise, and he had no intention of firing the anchoring bolts until he was sure a quick departure would not be needed.
We sure picked the wrong disguises for this job,
Han said, eyeing the bustling swarm.
I don't see anything that isn't a bug anywhere.
That's odd, Captain Solo. I don't see any bugs at all. The Verpine are a species of mantid. The Fefsi are more closely related to beetles, and the Huck are much closer to vespids then.
I don't think Han actually meant bugs, 3PO. Leia interrupted. He was using the term pejoratively.
He was. Might I suggest that this is a particularly poor time to insult insects, Captain Solo? You and Princess Leia seem to be the only mammals in this hangar.
Like I hadn't noticed.
Han grumbled.
Leia, do you notice anything strange about the Killicks loading those transports?
Now that you mention it, yes, Leia said. They really don't look like Lysel.
That too,
Han said. Unlike Lysel workers, these Killicks were nearly 2 meters tall, with powerful builds, blotchy gray-green chitin, and short curving mandibles that looked like bent needles.
But I was wondering why there aren't any coming down the ramps.
Leia studied the ships for a moment, then said, Good question.
Actually, the answer is rather clear. Those Killiks aren't loading the transports. They're boarding them.
It certainly appears that way, Leia agreed. The Chiss may be in for a big surprise.
A surprise?
C-3PO said, missing the obvious as only he could.
What sort of surprise?
You did notice all those SNK transports hanging out in the entrance tunnel?
Han asked.
Of course. All 127 of them.
Han whistled. He hadn't thought it was so many.
Okay, let's say each one of those tubs can transport 300 bugs. That's close to 40,000 troops, counting these ships.
A full division, Leia said. That's going to be a very nasty surprise for the Chiss, especially if the Killiks strike someplace they're not expecting.
Oh, dear. In that case, perhaps we should return to our own territory and send a messenger to warn Commander Fell.
Not a chance,
Han said, rising.
The Chiss are on their own, at least until we get our daughter back.
He led the way back to the aft hold, where Meewal and Cockmane were waiting with the hoods of their Ewok disguises tucked under their arms. The huge mag cannon Max that had once been stowed here was gone, now headed for a pirate base somewhere in the Galactic Alliance. If Lando's engineers could be trusted, the weapon would blow itself apart the first time it was live-fired. Han instructed the Nogri to put on their Ewok heads. After he and Leia checked their own disguises, Arcanian and Feline, he turned to the cargo lift controls and was puzzled to find a pair of Fefzi staring at him from the external monitors. The black meter-high beetles were standing beneath the cargo lift, staring up into the vidcam, frantically waving their forward legs for the cargo lift to be lowered.
What now?
Han demanded. Leia closed her eyes a moment, then said, Let them in. I think we know them.
Know them? If I'd ever met a puker, I'd remember.
Han was referring to the Fefzi habit of regurgitating food paste whenever they grew frightened.
You sure about this? I don't want to spend the rest of the trip in a stinky.
Han, their presences are familiar. Leia reached past him and depressed the lift control. Let them in. The lift had barely touched down before the Fefzi scrambled over the safety rail and began gesturing for it to be raised again. Han glanced at Leia uncertainly, then, when she nodded, brought the two insects up. The pair's antennae had barely risen above floor level when one of them began jabbering in muffled Ewokese. C-3PO shot something back in the same language, then turned to Han.
You were quite justified in your reluctance to let them aboard, Captain Solo. I haven't been spoken to quite so rudely since the last time we had dealings with that dreadful Ewok.
Ewok?
Han went over to the lift.
I think I'd rather have the bug.
The Fefzi jumped onto the deck of the hold, then reared up on its rear legs and began to flail its forelegs about haphazardly. A moment later, its head popped off and fell to the floor, revealing another head inside. This one, black and furry, with large dark eyes and little round ears. Tarfang! Leia exclaimed, coming to Han's side. What are you doing here? Tarfang began to chitter rapidly, waving his remaining Fefzi legs excitedly.
Oh, dear. He says if he tells you, he will have to kill you. Your choice.
That's okay,
Han said. The last time they'd seen Tarfang, Admiral Buatu had just offered him and Jai Jun positions as military intelligence affiliates.
We can guess.
The second Fefzi joined them and began to flail its arms around, as had Tarfang. Han reached over and twisted the head off, exposing a bug-eyed face with grayish, dew-lapped cheeks.
Jun!
Han slapped the Sullustan on the back of his costume.
I'm glad you're still alive, old buddy. And a little surprised, too.
Yes, all of our missions are very dangerous, Jun said, beaming. Admiral Buatu always sends Tarfang and me when the mission is likely to be fatal.
You certainly appear to be beating the odds, Leia said. How can we help? Tarfang pattered something impatient.
He says they're here to help us.
C-3PO translated.
The squibs have put a death mark on your heads, Jun explained. Over 1,000 credits. Each.
What?
Han scowled.
That doesn't make any sense. We have a deal with the squibs.
And they have a deal with Tito and Yugi, Jun said.
Tito said, we could eat your brains if we helped. Did they say why the Squibs want us killed? Leia asked. June shook his head. Only that it wouldn't be much of a job, because you'd never see it coming. The Sullustan pulled his Fefzi head back on, then turned toward Tarfang, who'd noticed the two Nogri in their Ewok disguises, and gone over to glare at them.
Tarfang, let's go! June said. The Flakaks are already on their way!
Instead of retrieving the head of his own disguise, Tarfang let out an angry yap and shoved Meowal. She reacted instantly, dropping the Ewok to the deck with a foot sweep and landing atop him in a full straddle lock that left him completely immobilized.
Tarfang! June snapped. What are you doing? We have to leave before the Stingers arrive!
Tarfang burbled an angry reply, purposely spraying saliva into the face of Meowal's costume.
I don't care if it's an insult, June replied. We don't have time for this. If we blow our cover, Admiral Pellion will never know where this division is going.
Han's brow shot up.
Pellion asked for this mission?
I'm really not at liberty to.
Yeah, sure,
Han said.
What I don't get is why the GA Supreme Commander would be that interested in a bug division headed for Chiss space.
I do, Leia said. If Pellion can tell the Chiss where these Killiks are headed, he just might convince them that the Galactic Alliance isn't siding with the colony. It's a long shot, but it's probably the galaxy's best chance to avoid a three-way war. Tarfang let out a long, fading gibber, and Cockmay moved over to threaten him with a stun stick. Not that it was necessary, with Meowal still straddling him.
Relax,
Han said.
Your secret is safe with us, and you've got to get out of here before the trouble starts.
He motioned for the Nogri to release Tarfang. Meowal growled low in her throat, but quietly slipped off the Ewok. Tarfang's eyes darted from one Nogri to the other, and it seemed to Han that he was trying to estimate his chances of launching a successful attack while still lying on the floor. Your devotion to operational security is admirable, Leia said, using the Force to set the Ewok back on his feet. But Captain June is right. We don't pose a threat to your mission, and you do need to be going. Han picked up the head of Tarfang's Fefzi disguise and plopped it in place before the Ewok could utter more threats, then shoved him onto the cargo lift with June.
The next time we see Galad, we'll be sure to tell him how brave you two are,
Han said.
And thanks for the warning. We owe you.
Cockmame activated the lift, and the two spies dropped slowly out of sight. Han went to Leia's side.
Now that was a surprise.
What? That they lasted this long? Leia asked. Or that they'd risk their lives to help us? Han shook his head.
That they're crazy enough to come back to this place in bug costumes.
You're right. Leia reached up and adjusted Han's wig. That is crazy. Han frowned.
It's different for us,
he said.
We're good at this stuff.
Sure we are, Leia said. That's why the Squibs are trying to kill us.
Yeah, I don't get that,
Han said.
We had a deal.
Maybe they don't like us having something on them, Leia suggested. Han shook his head.
That doesn't make sense. The Squibs know we can't tell Lysel anything without exposing ourselves. Trying to take us out just adds to the chances we'll be caught. And they know we try to settle the score by telling Raynar, who helped me and Luke on Bordoba.
Maybe they think they can kill us before we talk, Leia said.
They're arrogant, not stupid,
Han countered.
Even taking us by surprise, there's a big chance we'll survive. Any way you look at it, attacking us here is a risk.
Then it doesn't make sense, Leia said. They should be trying to cover for us, not kill us, at least while we're still in the nest.
Right.
Han rubbed the synthetic skin of his disguise, then said,
So they're trying to hide something. Something big enough to risk angering Raynar.
Something to do with the Black Mambrosia? Leia asked. Han thought for a moment, then shrugged.
I can only think of one way to find out.
Ask the Flakaks? Leia asked.
May I point out that Flakaks males are noted for being unhelpful and rude. I really don't think they're going to tell you much. Perhaps it would be better to leave before they arrive.
Too late. Leia closed her eyes for a moment. They're here, and they feel very dangerous. Han went to the control panel and checked the external monitors. The two Flakaks had arrived with four Verpine assistants. They were each bearing a crate, labeled green Thakatillo or bratrib or some other delicacy that the Squibs had pressured the Solos into carrying as part of the agreement to help them reach Jaina and Zek in the war zone.
Six of them,
he reported.
All carrying crates.
Their weapons are probably in the crates, Leia said. I'll take care of those first.
Right,
Han said, motioning Cockmame and Meewal to follow him.
We'll get a drop on them from behind.
C-3PO started to clunk away in the opposite direction.
I'm sure you don't want me in the way. I'll wait on the flight deck until you sound the all clear.
Good idea, Leia agreed. Keep a watch on the external monitors. Han drew his blaster pistol, a 434 Death Hammer, which Lando had given him to replace the trusty DL-44 that Raynar Thule had taken on Wotabah. Then he and the Nogri each slipped into one of the cramped crawlways hidden behind the service hatches in the back of the hold. The soft whir of the cargo lift sounded from the other side of the service hatch and sent a chill racing down Han's spine. The lift clunked into place, and Leia's muffled voice sounded through the service hatch. Are these the crates the Squibs, the directors, wanted us to take to Tanupe?
Right.
The Flakax ended his answer with a throat click.
Where do you... Queen's eggs!
Han pushed open the service hatch and saw the heads of all six insects turn toward the far corner of the hold, where the crate Leia had just force-ripped from the pincers of the first Flakax was crashing into the wall. It broke open, spilling a rifle version of the Verpine shatter gun and a variety of thermal grenades. Why, that doesn't look like green Thakatillo, Leia said. She pointed at the box in the second Flakax's arms. That crate, too, went flying, and the insects finally recovered from their shock. The four Verpine ripped the tops off their crates. Before they could pull their weapons from the boxes, Cockmame and Meewal opened up with their stun blasters and dropped all four from behind. Han leveled his death hammer at the Flakax.
Take it easy, fellas. No one has to get...
The pair launched themselves at Leia, clacking their mandibles in fury and spewing a brown fume from their abdomens. Han fired twice, but their chitin was so thick and hard that even the death hammer's powerful bolts did little more than blast fist-sized craters into it. Leia vanished beneath the two creatures, and Han stopped firing. He called for Cockmame and Meewal and raced forward. As he gulped down his first breath of bug vapor, his nose, throat, and lungs erupted into caustic pain. Within two steps, his eyes were so filled with tears he could no longer see. A step after that, he grew weak and dizzy and collapsed to his hands and knees, coughing, retching, and just generally feeling like a thermal grenade had detonated inside his chest. He crawled the last 3 meters to the fight and reached up to press the muzzle of his blaster to the back of a greenish thorax. With its large compound eyes and a fully circular field of vision, the Flakax had already seen Han coming. It caught him in the head with a lightning-quick elbow strike. The death hammer bolt went wide, ricocheting off the deck before it burned a hole through the wall. Then a muffled snap hiss sounded from beneath the insect, and Han was nearly blinded when the tip of Leia's lightsaber shot up through the Flakax, just a few centimeters from his nose. He barely managed to roll out of the way as the blade swept toward his face, opening the thorax from midline to flank and spilling bug blood all over Lando's deck.
Hey, watch!
Han had to stop and cough, then finished.
That thing!
Han staggered to his feet and pointed his blaster in the general direction of the tear-blurred melee in front of him, trying to separate his wife's shape from that of the Flakax attacking her. Then Cockmame and Meewal came leaping in, hacking and gasping as they slammed into the writhing pile. An instant later, the two Nogri went flying in the other direction, riding the surviving Flakax as Leia used the Force to send it tumbling across the hold. Han! Leia's voice sounded as raw and burning as Han's felt. Are you...
Fine.
He reached down and pulled her to her feet. They stepped out of Stink Cloud to hear Cockmame and Meowth snarling as they continued to wrestle with the second Flakax. Han wiped the tears from his eyes and found the bug lying face down on the deck, with the two Nogri sitting astride it, still in their Ewok disguises. Cockmame had the insect's arms pinned together behind its back at the elbow, while Meowth was holding its ankles, pulling its legs back against the hip joints every time it tried to open the gas duct in its abdomen. Leaving Leia to deal with the fray, Han secured the unconscious Verpine and stowed the impressive array of weaponry the insects had brought aboard. By the time he'd finished, Leia and the Nogri had the Flakax kneeling with its arms bound behind its back and its abdominal gas duct plugged with a piece of cloth. Leia waved the tip of her lightsaber in front of the insect's head. "Which one are you?" she asked. "Tito or Yugi?"
"Tito!"
The Flakax sounded insulted.
"I am the handsome one. Everyone knows."
"Yeah, those eyes of yours are really something," Han said. "Now why don't you explain why you were going to kill us?" Tito spread his mandibles in the buggish equivalent of a shrug.
"Thought it would be fun."
"We know the squibs put you up to this," Han pressed.
"You know that. You know why."
"Stop playing dumb," Han said. "You understand what we're asking. The squibs want us dead for a reason. What are they trying to hide?" The Flakax's mandibles spread wide, and a yellow mass of regurgitated something shot out and covered Han's chest.
"Kill me now. Better than what the directors will do if I break my quiet swear."
"Quiet swear?" Han repeated. "You mean, like a vow of silence?" Leia turned to Han. "I thought those crime vows were supposed to be reciprocal." "They are," Han said, seeing where Leia was headed. "But you know the squibs." Tito's head swung from Han to Leia and back again. And finally, he could no longer resist asking,
"The directors?"
Han and Leia exchanged looks. Then Han asked, "Should we tell them?" Leia shook her head. "It would just be cruel, since we're going to have to kill him anyway."
"What would be cruel?"
Tito asked. Meowth pressed her blaster to his head, but Tito seemed a lot more concerned about what they were keeping from him than the likelihood of being killed.
"Tell!"
Han frowned. "You sure you want to know? No one likes to die knowing they've been set up." Tito began to work his mandibles.
"How?"
"You don't want to know," Leia said. She turned to Meowth. "Go and..."
"Wait!"
Tito said.
"You tell me, I tell you."
Leia frowned down at the prisoner. "You sure you want to know? It'll just make you angry." "Really angry," Han said. "You just can't trust squibs."
"Flakax, never get angry,"
Tito said.
"Never get anything. Have no useless feelings like humans."
"Okay," Han said. "I'll give you a hint. Aren't you curious about how we knew you were coming?" Tito turned one eye toward Leia.
"Squibs not tell you? They want you dead."
"That's right." Leia made a small motion with her hand, then added, "And we're not the only ones." Tito spread his antennae.
"They want us dead too?"
"I don't suppose you noticed the thermal detonator in the Brot rib crate?" Han asked. He hadn't found any thermal detonator when he stowed the weapons that had spilled from the crate, but that hardly mattered. Han could always produce one from their own stores and claim the squibs had slipped it into the box when Tito was looking the other way. Tito considered this for a moment, then let out a long throat rattle.
"The directors broke their own swear."
"That's the way it looks, isn't it?" Han replied. Leia nodded. "And now that we've kept our part of the bargain..."
"The directors want you dead because Lysel isn't sending you to Tanupe like they promise," Tito said. "Lysel told them two legs are more use in Alliance. Send them with convoy."
Han's jaw fell.
"Wait a minute.
You're saying this convoy is headed for Alliance territory? Tito clacked his mandible shut.
Maybe.
Leia's brow rose. No wonder they want us dead.
Yeah,
Han said. If this convoy was headed for Alliance space, there could only be one purpose for all the war cargo they'd seen being loaded. The colony is supporting a coup. Maybe a whole string of them.
I think so.
Leia's gaze grew troubled, and she slowly turned to Han. Somebody has to warn Luke. Han nodded toward Tito and the Verpine.
What about them?
We can't take them back as prisoners, she said.
Then I guess there's only one thing to do,
Han said, starting back toward the insect. Leia caught him by the arm.
Han, you're not going to. Yeah, I am.
Han disengaged his arm.
I'm going to send him back to the squibs.
Three jumps after departing Lysel, Han was running a systems check while Leia plotted the course to the Rago Run, the long hyperspace lane that would take them back into Galactic Alliance territory. So far, the Swift had performed flawlessly, even reminding them to eat, when the ship's droid brain noticed that none of the processing units in the galley had been activated in 20 hours.
I don't like it,
Han said, studying the nacelle temperature history.
No machine is this.
Han was interrupted by the sharp pinging of an alarm. He shifted his gaze to the sensor area of the console and found the flashing beacon.
That can't be good.
He reset the alarm, then activated the intercom.
Be ready back there.
The Nogri replied that they were always ready, and a bank of status beacons turned amber, indicating that the Swift's weapon systems were coming online. Han brought up his tactical display and saw that a space-time hole had opened behind them. An instant later, the distortion closed and a bogey symbol appeared in its place.
I knew getting out of there was too easy, Han said.
After putting Tito and the Verpine off the ship, they had simply lifted the Swift's boarding ramp and pushed through the airlock membrane before the confused Killix had a chance to stop them.
Someone must have slapped a homing beacon on our hull.
Maybe, Leia said.
It's not going to do them much good, though. We'll be ready to jump in 30 seconds. As long as they don't start shooting in 20.
Han went to work on the sensors, trying to determine what kind of vessel was following them.
When it comes to a fight, this thing is no Falcon.
Before Han could get a sensor readout, the vessel's transponder code appeared, identifying it as a Mon Calamari Sailfish-class transport named Real Deal. A moment later, a chirpy squib voice began to hail them over the open comm channel.
Solo, you there?
The Deal fired its ion engines and began to approach. Han glanced over at Leia, who appeared just as surprised as he did, then activated his comm.
We're here.
What are you doing?
Asked a second squib, probably Grease.
You're going the wrong way.
We were starting to feel unwelcome,
Han said.
And that's close enough, you three. The Nogri are still a little sore about those hit bugs you sent.
Hey, we knew they didn't stand a chance against you,
Sly said.
But we had to try. That was good the way you turned Tito on us.
Grease sounded more angry than admiring.
He got crafty and sneaky before we could stop him.
But no hard feelings, okay?
Imala asked.
We're the ones who started it, so fair is fair.
Sure, Leia said. But why do I doubt you followed us out here to mend partition barriers?
That's what we like about you guys,
Sly said.
Nothing gets past you.
We could use someone like you in this thing of ours,
Imala added. The squibs paused expectantly.
You're trying to hire us?
Leia scoffed.
Recruit,
Sly corrected.
Hire is such an ugly word.
War is very good for business,
Imala added.
And this one is just going to keep getting bigger and better. trust me when I say that we can have a very profitable relationship.
Not a chance, Han said. But thanks for the offer.
Let me put it to you plainly, Solo.
Greasa's voice was low and menacing.
This isn't an offer you want to refuse.
I just hate it when someone tells me what I want. Han looked over, and seeing that the calculations for the next jump were complete, signaled Leia to transfer the coordinates to the guidance system. So why don't you...
You're really not getting this, are you?
Greece interrupted.
Jaina is still in colony space. We can help you get to her. Or we can get to her ourselves.
Leia's finger hovered over the transfer key. Are you threatening our daughter?
Not at all,
Imala said.
We're giving you a chance to protect her.
Han's rage boiled over. You try anything, and not only will I stop you, I'll personally drag you out of your fur and feed you to a Tagorian.
Now who's making threats?
Greece asked.
You think you're too good for us. So what choice do we have? It's your own fault,
Sly said.
We're not responsible for what happens.
That's it! Han grabbed the yoke and throttles, preparing to bring the Swift around to attack. There's not going to be enough left of you. Leia reached over and pulled his hands off the yoke. Han, no. Han frowned. No? Think about it. Leia deactivated the comm microphone. Why did they really come after us? Why did they put a death mark on us? Han thought about it. Right. They still haven't come clean with the Killix about June and Tarfang. No. Leia shook her head. The Squibs vouched for us to Lysel. If we tell the Alliance what the colony is planning, it's on their heads. Han let out a long breath. So they're trying to distract us. Exactly, Leia said. They don't need to hire us or kill us. If they can just delay us for a while, maybe even get lucky and actually put us out of commission. We're going to keep going, aren't we? Han interrupted. Leia nodded. We have to. She transferred the jump coordinates to the guidance system, and Han's heart suddenly felt as heavy as a black hole. Even if the Squibs talked their way out of being held responsible for Lord Risto's betrayal, they were sure to lose a fortune when the coups failed. And Squibs hated losing money. They would do their best to make good on their threat. The deal began to accelerate. Then the lock alarms began to chirp, announcing that the Swift was being scanned by targeting sensors. Sly's voice came over the comm channel.
I can't believe you're making us do this, Solo. Don't you love your daughter?
They're not bluffing, Leia, Han said, leaving his comm microphone off. You know they'll do it. They'll try, Leia said. Jaina can take care of herself. Yeah, I know. Han pushed the throttles forward and began to accelerate away from the deal. He knew Leia was right, that any assassin the Squibs sent after Jaina would be sorely outmatched. But that did not make it any easier to place the Alliance's welfare ahead of her safety. I guess it runs in her blood. What runs in her blood? Leia asked. Being a Jedi, Han answered. The attack alarms began to screech as the deal opened fire. Whatever Luke does with the Order, it's pretty clear you'll be staying in it. Duty always comes first with you. Leia looked hurt, but reluctantly nodded. I'm not the only one, Han. I know, Princess. The Swift shuddered as the deal's first salvo hit the rear shields. Han activated the hyperdrives, and the stars stretched into an opalescent blur. And Luke won't even give me a lightsaber. The convoy was only minutes from the Verpine capital, arcing over the distant yellow dot that was the Roche system's sun, on final approach to the glow-speckled lump of asteroid Nickel One. With their underpowered ion drives and puffed wafer silhouettes, The slain and corporal gatherers looked more like a long line of returning foragers than a deadly assault force. Mara could sense only a dozen presences aboard each ship, but some of those presences were a little too diffuse to be Verpine, and there was an electric hum in the force that reminded her of one of those hot jungle nights when all creation seemed ready to erupt into war. There was definitely something wrong with that convoy. She slid her stealth X into attack position behind the last vessel in line, then waited patiently as Luke and Jason worked their way forward, using the force to redirect the attention of the belly gunners as they passed beneath the ungainly gatherers. Despite the diffuse presences they sensed aboard the transports, Luke was pouring caution into the battle meld, urging Mara and Jason to show restraint. The hollow the Solos had sent, warning of a massive insect coup, had been so flickering and distorted that even R2-D2 couldn't confirm the voice print was Leia's. Luke and several other masters had immediately suspected that the message was a forgery, designed to trick the Jedi into attacking legitimate convoys. Luke had decided to dispatch a team to each insect culture belonging to the Alliance, but with strict orders not to engage in battle unless it grew clear that the Killix were indeed staging a coup. That was why Mara was so confused when a flash of white brilliance erupted at the front of the convoy. It looked like a shadow bomb detonation, but there had been no warning from either Luke or Jason. Nothing on the tactical display to suggest that a coup was actually underway. The convoy began to cluster, standard procedure when the leader wanted overlapping defenses, then continued toward the asteroid. Nine, Mara asked her astromech droid, is there any sign of a battle down there? The droid reported that a very large beradium explosion had just destroyed a light transport on final approach to Nickel One. I saw the shadow bomb, Mara said. I mean, is there anything on the surface? The meld suddenly stiffened with shock, then abruptly collapsed as Luke withdrew. Mara could feel his anger through their force bond, a searing pressure that meant he had already answered the question she had been about to ask her astromech. There was no hint of a battle on the surface of the asteroid. Jason had attacked without provocation. She reached out to Jason and found him filled with impatience, determined to stop the gatherers before they reached Nickel One. Mara urged him to withdraw. Another shadow bomb detonated at the head of the convoy, spraying specks of flotsam and torn hull in every direction. A Verpine belly gunner caught a glimpse of Mara's stealth X and began to stitch the surrounding darkness with cannon bolts. She rolled away without firing and sensed Jason trying to establish the meld again, reaching out to her and Luke in confusion and frustration. The convoy had pulled into a tight, three-dimensional diamond formation and was continuing to approach Nickel One, its gunners firing indiscriminately toward the surface. Whether the gunners were trying to suppress the asteroid's defenses or were simply reacting to Jason's attack was impossible to say. Like Luke, Mara kept her own weapons silent. A moment later, she felt Luke opening himself to the battle meld again, and Jason's relief flooded the force. He renewed his call to the attack, sharing his alarm and fear through the meld. Luke responded with disapproval and condemnation, urging Jason to withdraw. A sudden spark of understanding flashed through the meld, followed by a sense of hurt and indignity. Mara guessed that Jason had finally realized that his wingmates doubted his judgment, that they did not believe an attack was appropriate simply because he initiated one. The thought had barely flashed through Mara's head before the gaping rectangle of a hangar entrance appeared in her mind's eye. The turbo laser batteries in its four corners all sat quiet, their turrets ripped open by internal blasts. A single gatherer sat on the asteroid surface next to the hangar, with a line of pressure-suited Killix streaming out of its airlock. Nine! Mara was practically shouting. Didn't you tell me there were no signs of battle on the asteroid? The droid replied that there were no signs of a battle. Then what about those turbolaser batteries? Mara demanded. And the Killix? Nine reported that the turbolaser batteries were non-functional, and the Killix appeared to be debarking, not attacking. Never mind. Mara felt at once relieved and ashamed. Relieved that Jason had attacked for good reason. Ashamed that she and Luke had allowed their reservations, which now seemed unjustified, to compromise the team's effectiveness. Select targets by expediency, Nine. The droid illuminated a transponder symbol near the back of the convoy, and Mara swung in behind the gatherer it represented. She launched her first shadow bomb and immediately peeled off, accelerating toward the next target. An instant later, space brightened behind her, and her tactical display filled with static. She launched her second shadow bomb without even bothering to glance back and check the damage caused by the first. The light transport had not been built that could withstand a direct hit by a Jedi shadow bomb. More shadow bombs detonated near the middle of the convoy as Luke joined the battle. The stealth Xs swirled around the gatherers, attacking from all directions. Unable to catch more than a glimpse of the darting Jedi ships, the convoy's gunners set up rolling walls of laser fire. The Jedi, in turn, let the Force guide their moves, slipping around and under these barrages until they had obliterated another half a dozen vessels. Finally, the convoy pilots seemed to recognize they were fish in a barrel. They dispersed, each gatherer continuing toward a different corner of an imaginary square. As they fled, their gunners continued to blindly spray bolts into space. And now, many of Nickel One's surface batteries joined in, trying to provide safe lanes of approach for their surviving friends. That was the beauty of a coup. Confusion worked in favor of the attacker. Mara took out two more gatherers and felt Luke destroy another one, then realized that she had lost track of Jason. She could still feel him in the meld, but his presence had become cautious and furtive. She reached out to him, curious and concerned. His response seemed at once cocky and defiant, as though he was daring her to doubt him again. "Whatever you're doing, Hotshot, just don't screw up," Mara muttered aloud. "Too much depends on you." Jason seemed puzzled by the sentiment. Then, a sea of turbolaser fire flowered between Mara and her next target, and her astromech began screeching for her to evade. She juked, but continued toward her mark, then took a glancing strike on her flank and lost all her shields at once. "Shabba!" she hissed, still unwavering from her course. Nine began to bleep and whistle frantically, filling the display with all manner of dire warnings about what would become of them if she failed to withdraw from combat at once. Mara ignored him and launched her last shadow bomb. The attack caught the gatherer just above its wing and punched through the shields in a blinding eruption of white. The stealth X's blast tinting darkened, and she felt a terrible ripping in the Force as the vacuum tore the crew from its ruptured ship. Mara checked the tactical display and saw that only three gatherers remained, two on Luke's side of the asteroid and one on hers. She swung her stealth X after the nearest target, trusting the Force to guide her safely around the faint streaks of color that were flashing past its blurry canopy. Her astromech droid posted a polite but urgent message on the display, reminding her that they had lost their shields. "Relax, Nine," Mara said. "I never take more than one hit per sortie." The droid chirped doubtfully, then asked if she usually flew blind. "I'm not blind," Mara reminded him. "I have the Force." Nine interrupted her with a shrill whistle, reporting that they were receiving a desperate message from the Nickel One Hive Mother. "Then put on the comm speaker," Mara ordered. Nine replied that the message was not coming in over standard comm channels. Instead, it was being transmitted via radio frequencies that the Verpine used to communicate organically. "Fine. What's she saying?" A message appeared on Mara's display. "Help. The heart chamber is under attack by Old Ones and Verpine Membrosia traitors." "Old Ones?" Mara asked. Nine believed the Hive Mother was referring to Killix. "Tell her to lock herself in," Mara said. "We'll be there as soon as we can." Almost instantly, a question appeared in her display. "Who?" "Just tell her we're Jedi," Mara replied. the ones who've been attacking the convoy. The droid tweeted an acknowledgement, and the Hive Mother's reply appeared in the display half a second later. The Hive asks that the unseen Jedi hurry. The Membrosia traitors have already invited the Old Ones into the Heart Chamber, and the males who die for the Hive Mother are already in battle. Nine added a message of his own, noting that the ground emplacements were now targeting the Gatherers, and suggesting that the Jedi would only get in the way if they continued to attack the same targets. "Okay, Nine," she said. "Tell the Hive Mother we're coming in." The Hive Mother's reply appeared on the display almost instantly. "Yes, you are very fast. We can see you now, cutting the Old Ones down with your crystal-focused blade." "She can see us?" The reason occurred to Mara as soon as she had voiced the question. "Jason." The happy swell of pride that suddenly filled her force bond with Luke told Mara that her husband had reached the same conclusion. While the two of them had been fretting over Jason's trustworthiness and nearly blowing the mission, Jason had been doing what needed to be done and preventing the coup. He was already in the Heart Chamber. Jason was indeed a very good Jedi. "Ask the Hive Mother if it looks like we need any..." Mara was interrupted by the chime of an arrival alarm, and the transponder codes of a Galactic Alliance task force began to appear in her tactical display. Nine ran the message across the screen, informing Mara that he was not altering this data either. A moment later, a familiar, age-cracked voice came over the speaker in Mara's cockpit.
"This is Supreme Commander Gilad Pellion aboard the Galactic Alliance Star Destroyer Megador, advising Nickel One that we are here on a peaceful mission. We have reason to believe that a hostile force may attempt to overthrow your government."
It was Jason's voice that answered, sounding over his personal comlink.
"Consider your suspicions confirmed, Admiral Pellion," he said. "But there is no reason for alarm. The Jedi have matters well in hand." "The Jedi?" Pellion asked. "I should have known."
Mara felt Luke's curiosity pour into the meld, and Jason asked,
"Why is that?" "Because I've been getting reports that there were Jedi waiting almost everywhere that the Killix have attacked so far."
This time, Luke didn't even have to pour his curiosity into the meld. Jason simply asked,
"Almost? I'm afraid so, Jedi Solo,"
Pellion said.
"I am speaking to Jedi Jason Solo, am I not? And the Master Skywalker,"
Jason replied.
"We're here together." "Yes, that's what Master Horn reported,"
Pellion said.
"Regretfully, our garrison intercepted his team before they could prevent the Killix from landing on Thyfera."
The meld filled with alarm, though Mara couldn't say whether it was hers or Luke's or Jason's, and Jason asked,
"You don't mean to say..." "I'm afraid I do,"
Pellion replied.
"The Killix have taken control of our Bacta supply."
A thousand fingers of silver fire stabbed down from orbit, slicing through the emerald rain clouds. The downpour turned as bright as the core, and the ground shook so hard that the view in the periscope jumped like a bad holo signal. Still, the image remained clear enough to tell that the last wave of dropships, at least those few Jaina could actually see through the deluge, had landed almost unchallenged. Their passengers were already debarking in armored hover vehicles, streaming forward to join the hundreds of thousands of troops already massing behind the defensive shield at the drop sector perimeter. But the Chiss' success was not the cause of the icy knot between Jaina's shoulder blades, nor the reason her stomach refused to settle. Unu Thule had always known the colony would not be able to stop the enemy landing. After all, Tenupe was the linchpin of the Killik front, the gateway to the Sparkle Run and the colony's heart, and the Chiss had committed two-thirds of their offensive forces to its capture. So there was nothing unexpected about the success of the landing, nor even all that alarming. Jaina was reacting to something else, something the Great Swarm had not yet discovered. Jaina pulled away from the periscope and blinked for a moment, as her eyes readjusted to the dim shine ball light inside the rustling tunnel. The air was hot and humid, and filled with the bitter smell of battle pheromones, and the force was charged with the same pre-combat anxiety common to soldiers of every species. The passage was literally packed with Killix. Millions of thumb-sized Zhuge, an endless line of massive wreckers, a scattering of knee-high Walus. There were also a few dozen volunteers from other insect species, mostly mantis-like snootub hunters, shriveled-looking Geonosian warriors, and a handful of Chimerians who kept asking about her father. Jaina even saw a pair of greasy black-furred squibs, armed with repeating blasters and thermal detonators, who seemed unable to take their big eyes off her. She smiled and reached out to them in the Force, trying to offer reassurance and calm their fears. She wasn't very successful. They merely curled their lips and continued to watch her. Jaina would have liked to know whether Zek sensed anything unusual, but he was posted on a mountain more than 100 kilometers away, too far away for her to share what was in his mind. With their own nest, the Tat, still trapped inside the Utagetu Nebula, their mind link only functioned when they were within a few dozen meters of each other. Jaina reached out to Zek in the Force, communicating in the clumsy way Jedi usually did. When she felt nothing unusual, she withdrew from his presence and turned to a knee-high Killix standing beside her. "Walu, inform Unu Thul that I am having danger ripples." As she spoke, Jaina was absent-mindedly running her wrists along its antennae. "Ask him if Unu is sure the scouts have found all of the Chiss reserves." Walu acknowledged the order with a curt, With yellow, oversized eyes, and chitin so thin that it could be cracked by a stiff wind, the Killix of the Walu nest hardly made ideal soldiers. But Walu's mind shared over a much greater distance than most Killix, nearly 0.5 kilometer, compared with a typical range of a few dozen meters. And so they were posted throughout the Great Swarm to serve as a communications net. A moment later, Walu reported that Unu Thul did not sense any danger in the Force. He wanted to know if she and Zek were trying another trick like she had at Korribu. "No," Jaina interrupted. "We want to destroy the landing force too. Maybe a big defeat will make the Chiss rethink the wisdom of pressing this war." Walu relayed an assurance from Unu Thul that they would soon teach the Chiss to respect the colony. Then, a murky force pressure rose inside Jaina's chest, urging her and the rest of the Great Swarm to action. The tunnel filled with a loud clatter, and Walu rumbled a more specific order from Unu Thul, telling Jaina to prepare her horde for the assault. Jaina looked down a side tunnel to a large underground chamber, one of hundreds that the Killix had been excavating since the dropships landed. A steady shower of moist jungle soil was pouring down from the ceiling, partially obscuring the pale white chitin of the 4 Malum burrowers already digging their way toward the surface. "Tell Unu Thul we'll be attacking the command craft any moment," Jaina said. She stopped just inside the entrance and waited in silence for the Malum to break through to the surface. Thankfully, the jungle soil was too moist to raise dust as it fell. But as the burrowers neared the surface, the dirt changed to mud, and the chamber floor quickly grew slick. Finally, the Malum boomed a warning down the shaft, and a loud sucking noise sounded from the surface. An instant later, the heat-blackened nose of a dropship crashed down into the chamber, its shield generators overloading and exploding as they struggled to push back the cramped shaft the Malum had dug beneath it. Rain began to pour down the hole, and the craft's forward beam cannons continued to fire, filling the room with heat and steam and color, and blasting bantha-sized craters into the walls and floor. Jaina made a scooping motion with her hand, using the force to hurl a huge mass of soil at the cannons, driving the mud down the emitter nozzle and packing it tight around the galvan coils. The weapons exploded an instant later, blowing off the turret and leaving a 5-meter breach in the top hull. The Killix rattled forward in a boiling wave, the tiny Zhuge swarming along the walls and ceiling, the mighty wreckers springing directly onto the dropship. The wreckers boomed their thoraxes in glee and dived through the breach left by the destroyed turret. A few seconds after the first insects had entered, the dropship's hull began to reverberate with muffled sizzles and dull pings. Jaina clicked her throat in approval, then reached out in the force to see if she could sense Jagged Fell's presence aboard the vessel. They were enemies now, but she did not want them to die. As a skilled tactician and a high-ranking Chiss officer, he would be a great asset to the colony, assuming he could be captured and brought into a nest. And if Jag became a joiner, she mused, the Dawn Rumble would be so much more. Walu burst out. The little Killick started to turn and flee back down the tunnel. No! Jaina caught the insect by an arm. This way. If the Chiss were arming the dropship's self-destruct mechanism, the last place they wanted to be when the shockwaves hit was underground. Dragging Walu along, Jaina force-leapt onto the dropship's hull, then sprang again, leaping half a dozen meters to the surface. She found herself standing in the heart of the Chiss landing zone, a clearing of mud and ash, surrounded by a circle of blast-toppled mogo trees. 100 meters away, the landing zone abruptly gave way to a skeleton jungle, a leafless tangle of trunks and limbs stripped bare by Chiss defoliating sprays. In the distance, barely visible through the pouring rain and the naked timber, she could see the upended tail of another dropship, rising out of a hole similar to the one from which she had emerged. A flurry of shrill sizzles erupted as a Chiss squad opened up with their Carrick rifles. Walu tried to dive back underground, but Jaina jerked her in the opposite direction. I told you, this way! Jaina started across the clearing, dodging and weaving and dragging Walu along. It's safer! Of course they're shooting at us. Jaina reached the edge of the clearing and dived for cover. They're the enemy! Jaina popped up and began to pour bolts back across the clearing. The nearest dropship, the one she had bounded up, had not yet self-destructed, and the Zhuge were swarming up the hull and pouring out across the landing zone. The wreckers were coming too, springing out of the pit by the dozens, booming their thoraxes in glee, and spraying shattergun pellets in every direction. But the Chiss were recovering from their shock and making their presence known. Nearly half the leaping wreckers tumbled back into the hole, their thoraxes trailing arcs of gore, or their heads vanishing in the flash of a maser beam. And many of those who did reach the jungle floor landed in pieces or limp, oozing heaps. Jaina did her best to cover them, but the Chiss troops were camouflaged in color-shifting fractal pattern armor that made them nearly impossible to see. Then a powerful jolt shook the ground. The nearest dropship's tail erupted into a ball of shrapnel and orange flame, and the force shuddered with the anguish of a mass death. Jaina dropped back behind the tree and turned to pull Walu down beside her. She found only a shard of white-hot durasteel lodged in a blood-sprayed mogo trunk behind where the Killick had been standing. Jaina felt an enemy presence behind her and turned to find a trio of Chiss soldiers leaping over a mogo trunk. Their Carrick rifles were already swinging in her direction. She swept her hand across her body, using the force to redirect their aim. Maser beams sprayed harmlessly past, filling the air with smoke, splinters, and heat. The leader was on Jaina instantly, his red eyes shining with hatred behind his helmet, as he clubbed at her head with his rifle butt. She ducked, using the force to pull him over her back and send him crashing into the trunk behind her. The other two Chiss arrived a step later, one bringing an armored knee up at her face. Jaina blocked with her blaster, at the same time squeezing the trigger and bumping fire into the stomach armor of her other attacker. The bolts ricocheted away and sent the soldier stumbling back, but not before he slammed the barrel of his own weapon down on the back of her head. Jaina found herself kneeling on the ground, her vision narrowing, her hands empty, and the deafening crack of the blow still echoing inside her skull. She tried to stand and felt the strength drain from her body. No! Zek touched her through their battle meld, pouring strength into her through the Force, urging her to stay conscious. Jaina fell flat to the ground, then unhooked her lightsaber and activated the blade as she rolled away, slicing both soldiers at the knees. They screamed and crashed down behind her. She felt her blade move and recoil as a maser beam crackled in